are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
Max and friends, he says what he wants, ain't holding nothing back, back. Got the recipe for life, and he's inspiring. He's not scared of any topic, from sex style to gossip.
LA Talk Radio, this is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. Welcome back to another Sunday night edition of Max and Friends. Did you all have a wonderful weekend? How was your week? How was your weekend? What's going on? Talk to me. Tweet me at Max Tucci. And while you're tweeting me, I think you need to tweet who my guest who's going to be on tonight, which I'm super excited about. New York Times bestselling author, novelist Barbara Taylor Bradford is joining me momentarily. We're going to talk about her new book, which I can't wait to discuss. Cavendon Hall. It just sounds like a page in my history with Delmonico's and all these kooky families and the servants, and it sounds like my childhood. But we're going to talk to Barbara Taylor Bradford coming up about her new book and also about her career. From 1979, she's been a novelist, and she has literally over 100 million copies sold of her 30 novels, almost 30 novels, in 90 countries, 40 languages. Let's talk about that. But before we talk about that, you know, we've got hot topics and all this kind of stuff going on. And Prince Harry is allegedly getting married and impregnated a girl. So maybe we should talk to Barbara Taylor Bradford about that relationship and that scandal. Maybe she's already foreseen it and it's in her next book. But nonetheless, we're going to have a great time tonight here on Max and Friends. I went sailing today in Biscayne Bay, saw dolphins, saw literally a stingray pop out of the water. It was unbelievable when there's just all this nature around you and you can be still and bask in the moment, in the present. And I always say where we are right now is exactly where we're supposed to be. And that's right here on Max and Friends on LA Talk Radio. Hey, it's April, the first Sunday of the month. So you know what that means. Dr. Maya Love is going to give us her astrological forecast for every sign for the month, her Vedic astrological forecast. They're just really insightful and good. And if you feel like you want to get a reading from Dr. Maya Love, well, then stay tuned because Maya is going to be joining us in the studio and telling you how you can do that. And on top of that, go get the LA Talk Radio app for free, please. And like I like to say on every Sunday night, if you get that LA Talk Radio app, you can take me to bed with you if it's 11 o'clock on the East Coast. 8 o'clock on the West Coast, you're still driving or having fun, so join me and let's have fun together. Tweet me, at Max Tucci. I'm getting tweets right now. I love you all for listening. So keep on sending the tweets, at Max Tucci. And you know what, Ronan? Let's go right into our astrological forecast by Dr. Maya Love. And when we're back, New York Times bestselling author Barbara Taylor Bradford. Stay tuned.
Hi everyone, this is Maya from VedicAstroLounge.com on Max and Friends, LA Talk Radio, bringing you Vedic Astrological Forecast for April 2014. As always, if you have any questions or if you would like a reading, please feel free to reach me at VedicAstroLounge.com. The planetary positions for the month of April 2014 are as follows. Sun is currently transiting Pisces but moves into Aries on April 13th. Mercury is currently transiting Pisces but moves into Aries on April 20th. Venus is currently transiting Aquarius and moves into Pisces on April 28th. Mars remains retrograde in Virgo. Jupiter is currently transiting Gemini. Saturn is currently retrograde in Libra. The north node of the moon is currently transiting Libra and the south node of the moon is currently transiting Aries. The main highlights for this month are the retrograde motion of Mars in Virgo and the Sun-Mars opposition, which happens on April 9th and April 10th. Mars is retrograde in Virgo for the entire month of April. Mars as a planet represents power that fuels our desires and actions. It is an important window of time to learn about what true power is and how to handle power in our day-to-day lives. It is important to realize that true power comes from within, and when we channel inner power, everything we do effortlessly uplifts all beings in this universe. The pursuit of power outside of ourselves leads to a path of pain and suffering to ourselves and others. We humans, as a collective, need to channel inner power than to obsessively pursue power from outside of us and use it for selfish reasons. Instead, it is important to channel our inner power that uplifts everyone. It is for each one of us to recognize true power and to make a wise choice. Sun represents the soul, so it is important to recognize and embrace the power of the soul during this time. The sign of Virgo is an earth sign, and it is important for the humanity as a whole to set stage for a change in perception of power. True power is filled with love, a love that illuminates all beings on earth. Here is the astrological forecast for the month of April 2014 for the 12 Vedic moon signs. Aries, this is your month. Mars is retrograde in your sixth house, so keep your focus on health and well-being. Avoid conflicts with others. Taurus, this is your month. Mars is retrograde in your fifth house. Channel your creativity wisely without interference of the ego. Gemini, this is your month. Mars is retrograde in your fourth house. It might be the right time to heal any unresolved conflicts with family, especially with your mother. Cancer, Mars is retrograde in your third house. You'll experience many wonderful moments filled with healing of your heart and soul. Leo, Mars is retrograde in your second house. It'll assist you to be loving and kind with family and dear ones when there are conflicts. Not a good month for financial investments. Virgo, Mars is retrograde in your first house. It's a good window of time to let go of any selfish pursuits and expand your vision of yourself. Libra, Mars is retrograde in your 12th house. Focus on hidden aspects of yourself as it is important to heal them. Scorpio, Mars is retrograde in your 10th house. Focus on your work and avoid any unnecessary workplace conflicts for the next 2 months. Capricorn, Mars is retrograde in your 9th house. Time to resolve any misunderstandings with your dad. Travel may not be very fruitful. Aquarius, Mars is retrograde in your 8th house. It is important to avoid long-distance travel during this month. Also avoid night travels. Pisces, it is very important to focus on your relationship with your partner and friends. Avoid unnecessary conflicts. That brings me to the end of the forecast. But before I leave, I would like to say that it is important for each one of us to take responsibility for our lives. The greatest power anyone could ever have is the power of love. The power of love is the true inner power. Let us all channel our true inner power and uplift everyone in this universe. Thank you and many blessings.
LA Talk Radio, this is Max and Friends.
LA Talk Radio, this is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci, and that was the divine Dr. Maya Love giving you your Vedic astrological forecast for the month of April, everyone. Are you happy about it? Tweet me at Max Tucci. And while you're tweeting, I recommend you also tweet BTB novelist, because the divine Mrs. Barbara Taylor Bradford is joining us tonight on Max and Friends. We're going to talk about life and love and her many, many novels and the newest one, Cavendon Hall, on Max and Friends. Welcome, Barbara Taylor Bradford, New York Times bestselling author. Hello, Barbara.
Hello, Max.
Well, it's a thrill and an honor to have you here tonight on Max and Friends, because I just adore your books, and I'm already engrossed in Cavendon Hall. It reminds me so much of my childhood. So we'll
Excuse my voice. I've had a cold, but I'm better. However, it's a bit weird. I sound a bit hoarse, but I'm okay to talk.
Nonetheless, you're here, and we're glad for that, and we are going to talk about your book, but before we get into Cavendon Hall, let's talk a little bit about your life and growing up, because you have quite a unique story. You started writing in 1979, the year I was born.
that was the publication of A Woman of Substance in 1979,
yes.
Max, but I actually started much earlier than that. I sold my first short story when I was 10 years old, and I became a journalist at 16, and was on the local newspaper, the Yorkshire Evening Post, and then later moved to London and worked in Fleet Street on a number of newspapers and magazines. But I always wanted to write fiction, as I had done when I was 10.
How much fun is that? Now, you know, it's quite interesting because your books have spanned it. A Woman of Substance, which is just... it's one of those books that not only grabs you but holds you and then makes you want to read all of the other ones that you have written. But let's go back to England and let's talk about your childhood, because I heard that I was 7 years old you actually started writing and you had your first book. Was it 7 or 10?
I started writing at 7. My mother taught me to read. So when I went to kindergarten at the age of 4, I was the only child in the class, actually, that could read. She was very much, she was crazy about books, and she enrolled me in the library when I was 5, and, of course, encouraged me, and I started to write at 7. She liked a story that I'd done when I was 10 years old and sent it to a children's magazine who asked the young readers to send in contributions. And not only did they print it, and I saw my byline for the first time, but they actually paid me 10 shillings and sixpence. So as Hemingway once said to a young man, you can't call yourself a writer until you're paid for what you write. So I fit that bill okay because I was paid at 10.
How fabulous is that? At 10 years old, you're a paid author. Now, you know, there's a quote that you're known for saying, which is, not being able to read is a death sentence. Elaborate on that, because I could not agree more. And it's so important to talk about books. And I just love that quote. So why...
Well, the quote has become a bit longer now because I've worked a lot here in New York for Literacy Partners, and I'm on the board. And what we do in New York is open centers to teach people to read. But I'm also the ambassador for the National Literacy Trust in England. And when I was there in February to promote the new book, Cavendon Hall, it came out there in February. I went to a school and I was talking to girls and who can read, by the way. It's a very good school. But what I said was, not being able to read is a death sentence. Being able to read is a lifeline to the world.
And that's
and
the
you
truth.
See, if you can't read, you have no life. What if we were invaded and all you had was a crawl on television to look at and you couldn't read it and didn't know what to do? What about medicines and labels and street names? It is a death sentence.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm trying, you know, the weird thing is that there are so many people that can't read in America and also in England. And here in England especially is the land of Shakespeare and the Brontes and Dickens and Thomas Hardy and a feeling for the language. And yet today it's as bad as it is here. And it's really bad in America. And I really do work hard to help people to learn to read, to save their lives in some instances.
Absolutely. Now, you did write a book titled Hidden. So tell us about Hidden, because that's a book that will get people who grab your novels and say, can I read these? Which Cavendon Hall, by the way, everyone who's listening tonight, the chapters are great. They're not these in-depth chapters. They just keep you going from chapter to chapter. So it's fun to read that. But Hidden is about, 160 some odd pages, correct?
I'll tell you, yes, it is. Hidden came about because, excuse me, my British publisher said, would I write a few what they call novellas, which is a short book, like a long short story in a way, because they wanted to use them for e-books, because they're always asking me for a book, my readers, and I can't do something like Cavendon Hall every few months, but I can do novellas. And I wrote Hidden, and my publisher sold it to Amazon, and it became an ebook. But then a charity in England called Quick Reads asked if they could have the book, because, you know, for nothing. So we said, yes, go ahead, take it. And they put it out as a book. It's very tiny in the sense that it's not very thick. But people who can read but have lost the habit or find a big book intimidating, hidden as a book, was published for them for something like 99 cents, so that they could get back into the habit. And actually, it's a good little story. It's about an abused wife, and her girlfriends kidnap her and hide her somewhere where they know nobody will ever find her, whilst they plot to... well, not to kill the abusive husband, but to render him helpless. And it's done very well. It was number one in England, and it's now here on Amazon. And I've just finished another one, another little book for an ebook called Treacherous.
How divine.
How about that? Treacherous.
Now, while you're writing Hidden and Treacherous, are these any of these experiences that you had in life growing up with your girlfriends?
No, because I'm not an abusive wife. I'm not an abused wife, and I don't betray my girlfriends, as happens in Treacherous. But people do tell me a lot. I've got that sort of shoulder. People like to cry on it, you know.
Well, that's a lovely shoulder to have, isn't it?
Well, it is, because sometimes you can help people by just letting them, you know, if they have somebody to talk to, it can be wonderful to just unburden yourself and know that what you've said isn't going to go anywhere. Maybe in a book, but not to other friends.
And then we hide their name. We change their name, right?
That's right. Change the name, change the country. Change the town. Change it all.
But nonetheless, you know, you have... Do you remember the day that when you were first told that your book was made a New York Times bestseller?
I don't remember the exact day, no, but it went. It came out, as you know, in 1979 here. And my editor at Doubleday had said all along that this book was going to be a bestseller. But, you know, you never really believe it, do you? I mean, I didn't anyway. And I said, but are you sure? And she kept saying to me, I'm sure. And sure enough, it was. I was... very thrilled. Of course I was thrilled. And it was very exciting. And it stayed on the New York Times list for about 52 weeks when it became a paperback. It went on as a hardcover bestseller for about 10 weeks. And when it came out in paperback, it was like 53 weeks on the list. And it is thrilling because... unless you're very jaded or don't care, but I sat 2 years writing that book. Obviously, it's great to have readers.
Absolutely. And your readers adore you. You know, we were going through Facebook today, and they were just loving the new book and how they can't put it down. Cavendon Hall, a novel, New York Times bestselling author, Barbara Taylor Bradford is joining me tonight on Max and Friends, a legend in the writing world, and we're pleased to have her on. Books that we can go on forever about. Letter from a Stranger, Secrets from the Past, Emma's Secret. What was Emma's Secret? Was it anything like Victoria's Secret?
No. It had nothing to do with underwear and bras and panties. Emma's Secret was a secret that belonged to somebody else that she had kept.
Right.
It was a secret about her son and a woman that he had been involved with. And she knew about it, but never, ever betrayed that relationship. So that she didn't have a secret. It was somebody else's. But, you know, a lot of journalists have said to me, why do you love writing about families, these family sagas? In England, they call me the undisputed queen of the family saga. And you mentioned A Woman of Substance. That was a family saga, and I've written many, as well as writing modern books set now. But do you know what it is, Max? There's no better place to find high drama than in a family.
Than in the family.
Especially if it's a big family, because you have greed and love and envy and jealousy and adultery and God knows what, and sometimes murder if there's a lot of money involved. But a family of people is just a place to put a lot of human beings and show their relationships to each other. And that makes for very high drama.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of the Queen herself gave you a very prestigious award. Tell us about it.
Yes, she gave me in 2007, she gave me the Order of the British Empire, which is commonly termed an OBE, and it was for services to literature, and I went to Buckingham Palace with my husband, Bob, the same husband I've always had, and he sat in the audience, and I went up there, and, you know, people say, well, what was it like when she pinned the medal on? And I said, well, you know, they're very smart. They don't let her pin it on you. Because imagine trying to pin something on a person's lapel, especially if it's a man and it's a thick suit. What happens is they, meaning the courtiers, before you go to the Queen, they pin on your jacket like a silver brooch. But what it is just a bar. The Queen hangs the medal on that. Behind the medal, which is the symbol of the OBE, there's a hook. And she just hooks the medal on your jacket. So she doesn't have to struggle with a pin and stab you, you know.
Well, Barbara Taylor Bradford is giving us the secrets of the kingdom.
Yes, that's right. But she was lovely, and she was, you know, she's really very, still very pretty. She's got twinkly blue eyes and a beautiful skin. She's tiny, of course. She's about 4'8". That's why she stands on a platform, because sometimes she's giving an award to a very tall soldier, so she's got to be a bit higher up. But she's lovely and charming, and what can I tell you?
Does she read your books?
I don't know whether she does or not, but she said, I know you've written a lot of books, Mrs. Bradford. And I said, yes, I have, Your Majesty, and many of them about British history. And she gave me this look and said, oh, that gives you endless possibilities.
Indeed it does. Indeed it does.
You know, I thought she's probably thinking about her dysfunctional family at this moment.
Now, Barbara Taylor Bradford, is their family not the best family to write about?
Well, I suppose it could be, but it's not going to be me that writes about it. I don't want to have my head cut off, right?
Especially
like
now
Henry VIII, chopped heads off.
For authors. But nonetheless, will you stay with us? We're just going to play a quick song, and then we're going to talk about Cavan and Hall. Is that okay?
That's lovely.
Wonderful. And this song is for you, Barbara Taylor Bradford. It's from Julio Iglesias. We'll be right back on Max and Friends.
Thank you.
To all the girls I've loved before, who travel in and on my door, I'm glad they came along. I dedicate a song to all the girls I've loved before, to all the girls I once caressed. And may I say I felt the best for helping me to grow. I owe a lot, I know, to all the girls I've loved before. And they will leaves, the chains are always blowing. And every time I try to stay, the winds, the chains continue blowing. And they just carry me away to all the girls who share my life, who know someone else's wife. I'm glad they came along. I dedicate the song to all the girls I loved before, to all the girls who cared for me, who filled my nights with ecstasy. They live within my heart. I'll always be a part of all the girls I've loved before. The winds, the chains are always blowing. And every time I try to stay, the winds, the chains continue blowing. And they just
LA Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. That was Julio Iglesias for the divine Mrs. Barbara Taylor Bradford, who's joining us now. And we're going to talk about her new book, Cavenden Hall, which is going to bring you, everyone, to a bygone era. And it's an era that I adore. And it reminds me of my family's restaurant, which was Delmonico's in New York, especially in the 30s and the 40s when life was really, really amazing in New York, but going through the Edwardian times and
no, it UK. Was amorous, you know. It people love these books, and that's yeah. why they love Downton Abbey, the show, because it takes you, it's escapism, Max.
It is.
You know, it takes you to a glamorous era. My book starts in 1913, which is just before that horrendous war, and it's the last beautiful summer, and something terrible happens to the one of the daughters of the Earl of Mowbray, who, that's the Ingham family, they're the aristocrats, and it's something awful that could bring them down. But the Swans, who are not really servants, they're retainers, and they live in that house and in that village, they actually come to the rescue of the Inghams, as they have been doing their preceding, you know, their antecedents have been doing for 160 years. So it's really a story about two families in a great stately home, and then there's the downstairs. It's upstairs in the middle and downstairs.
And downstairs.
And downstairs with the butler and the cook and the housekeeper and the footman and the maids, and we get a bit of their life as well as the life of the Inghams and the Swans.
And but sometimes a lot happens, their lives are more scandalous sometimes than the upstairs.
Well, sometimes they are, but, you know, then there's that awful war and how it changed the world. And I do take you to the Battle of the Somme and Verdun, and when, you know, men died in the thousands, in the hundreds of thousands. So it's quite a dramatic book in many ways. And if I had to sum it up in one line, it's full of human emotions.
It is full of human emotions. Now, let's go into Cavenden Hall. Did you picture this grand estate? And what does it look like to you?
It looks like the way I described it in the book, which, of course, is big, because they always, when a man was given an honor, in this instance, he was a man called Humphrey Bingham was elevated to the peerage in 1770. See, I've always got to give a backstory. I never just plop somebody on a page. Of course, none of these people existed. I mean, they're inventions. But that is what I invented, that he was elevated to the peerage. He became an earl, the first earl. And their duty was always to build a big house, because it then offered employment to local people as cooks and butlers and footmen and gardeners. And that is how, in a sense, they were able to employ local people where they had built the house. That was one of the reasons for the house. Mm. Truly, that's not invented. That's right. British history. So I envisioned the house as being, obviously, it had to be large with a terrace and a parkland and gardens. And one of the things they often did in the Georgian period was build an ornamental lake, which they made. It's a man-made lake. They put the house on a hill and the lake down below, and you got the reflection of the house in the lake. And that was kind of a crafty thing the Georgian architects did, so that you had a view of the house when you were outside, which I always loved seeing that. I tell you, it looks a little bit like a house I used to go to as a child called Harewood House, outside Leeds, not far from a place called Ripon, where my mother grew up and I went to as a child. And I based it a bit on Harewood, which was built like a square. I mean, I know that sounds funny, but if you can think of a square with four towers on each corner and a terrace on each side, on three sides of the house. So I imagined it and I, you know, created it. I created Little Skell Village, which doesn't exist in reality, but there is a River Skell. So I used local things that I grew up with and created the house and the family and the people. And lo and behold, everybody loved everybody. And the readers loved everybody in the book. They just want to know what happens to them. So guess what? I'm writing the speech.
Yes. Now, you know, about Cavendon Hall. Now, when you write just in general, but it's particularly in this book, do you become in your mind friends, let's say, with the 6th Earl of Marlbury?
Well, you've got to really do what I do is I create a background for each main character on a postcard. I just say how old they are, what do they look like, when were they born, what are their faults, what are their qualities. Just one-liners. So I keep those on my desk, and I can always look and say, oh, I've forgotten she's mad at somebody for some reason. I make notes all the time about the characters. And yes, I do become friends. They become very real to me. And this is why I'm writing now The Cavendon Women. That's mm-hmm. the title of the new book. And they've all come back to me immediately, because they really, I've given them such detailed backgrounds that don't necessarily show in the book, but they, because I know them so well, they've come to mind very quickly. And I do become friends, and you know what? I think that the reader feels that as well.
Absolutely.
That they really know these people. I've had so much stuff on my social networks about saying, what happens to Miles? Because it's rather an abrupt ending in the book with Miles. And they want to know what happens to him and his life. And you've got to write another book.
Well, and Miles, poor, cute little Miles, he's attending Eton, which is very prestigious. So, yes, I could see how people fall in love with the character and they almost want to follow them, you know, especially now we become such voyeurs of lives and we want to follow everyone. And so when you have a book like Cavendon Hall, you want to know what happens to the characters.
Well, of course, Miles grows up in this book and he's forced to marry a woman he doesn't love. So, of course, there he is. He's stuck on a course that he cannot retreat from, because it's his life. His life has been planned, and this course, it must take place. And the die is cast, you might say. He has no alternative to do what he's supposed to do. But you find out what happens in book number two.
Book number two. Now, why did you write Cavendon Hall now?
Well, you know why? I thought of Cavendon Hall 6 years ago, and I thought of friendships that I've had with women, which have lasted a long time. And a friend of mine had just died in Chicago 6 years ago, and I'd come back from her memorial service with my husband, and I was thinking about her and how long we'd been friends, and she was English but living in Chicago, and I started to think about long friendships, and I suddenly had the idea for Cecily Swan and De Lacy Ingham, two little girls in Edwardian England, the aristocrat and the girl from the Swan family, the retainers, becoming friends for life. And I was so taken with the idea, I actually sat down and wrote about 30 pages of outline and realized I'd written an outline for two or perhaps even three books. So I put it away because I knew, having done a series a few years earlier called Ravenscar Dynasty, that my publishers, neither here nor in England, would want a two-book series, you know, and an historical one at that. I knew that they wanted me to write a few modern books. So I never showed it to them, but I did mention it. And it was when I finished Secrets from the Past in 2012, which came out last year, that I mentioned Cavendon again. And everybody said, oh, yes, Barbara, can you write the first book now? And we'll decide later if we're going to do two. And so I wrote the first book last year. I finished it last July. And so I had a lot of time to think about it, to be very honest, Max, because I do think about other books when I'm writing one. And I thought about those two girls and the families for a long time before I actually wrote Cavendon Hall. And it came not from any inspiration, because I don't really ever get inspiration. It came because I was thinking of a friendship I'd had for 30 years, and my whole life flashed before my eyes as I sat on that plane coming back to New York from my friend's memorial service. And I thought, you know, a friendship like that, you don't often find. And then I came to Cecily and De Lacy.
How lovely. Now, speaking of planes, you know, earlier today I watched This Is Your Life, when you were surprised when you were taking the Concorde.
Yes.
And how was that to be in the airport there, and all of a sudden, the next thing you know, this is your life, Barbara Taylor Bradford?
Well, I was shocked. And of course, I was even more shocked because my husband had been very much involved, but didn't tell me a thing. And you know, Julio is an old friend of ours, so he happened to be in London. I was going to be in London at that time, so Bob spoke to him and said, would you do a little bit about Barbara? And he's, yes. And I thought, I wonder why Max chose Julio's song. And Julio, now I know.
You see, I do my research, Barbara Taylor Bradford.
You sure do.
I do my research. But, you know, we have a great Twitter, actually, from one of your fans, and they have a question for you, if we may ask you.
Yes.
And they said that there's a rumor going around about your home in Connecticut that the lake was heated for your swans. Is that true or false?
Well, we don't have that house anymore. We sold it a long time ago. I'll tell you, there were two swans we inherited two swans from the people we bought it from. But the reason, and they did heat it, the previous owners, in order to stop the lake from freezing, because you see the swans have to be in water. But the heater they used is quite a well-known product that is used to keep ponds unfrozen for cows and horses to drink from. So it wasn't invented for swans, but it's a device that's used in ponds on properties in order to have the lake available. But you see, can you imagine the two swans would have been frozen? It would have been Swan Lake forever, wouldn't it? Two swans frozen on the lake.
Now, where in Connecticut was your home?
It was in Litchfield County.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And it was in a little town called Warren. But yeah, we sold it a few years ago.
Yeah. You know, funny enough, because I grew up in Greenwich, Connecticut.
Oh, so you did?
Yes.
Yeah, well, and we were probably neighbors.
And of course, I was born a New Yorker. So, you know, people are saying, why do you embrace New York as much as you do and choose it your residence?
Me?
Yes.
I love New York. Bob and I love New York. We've lived here since I was married. And we, in fact, have just recently in November sold a very large apartment to Uma Thurman.
Oh.
The actress who has three children, she bought our apartment, and we're living in a furnished apartment until Easter, because I've been redoing our new apartment in another part of the city, and we're going to be, I've got workmen in there now and painters, and we'll be moving into the new place at Easter, around that time.
How exciting.
And I love New York. It's a very exciting city. And I've lived here for years, and I don't know where else I would want to live unless it's L.A.
Well, you know, my grandfather owned Oscar's Delmonico restaurant down on Wall Street.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
no, I didn't know that.
The history in our family and all of the people they served at the restaurant, that's a whole nother book.
That is. You should write it.
You maybe you've inspired me to do so. I have to get on that author wagon. But nonetheless, April 9th, you have a book signing, I hear, in New York. Or is it actually...
No, I have on the 9th, which is this week, actually it's Wednesday, I have... there's a club called the Harmony Club, and I think it's a ladies' lunch, and I will be speaking and signing books. But actually, I was there last Monday because Jimmy Niederlander, the theatre owner and Broadway producer, was 92.
Wow.
And he had his 92nd birthday, and Bob and I sat at his table, and my dinner partner was the talented Tommy Tune.
How fun is that? Everyone, for more information about that event, April 9th at the Harmony Club in New York City, it's a luncheon in celebration of Barbara Taylor Bradford's new bestseller, Cavendon Hall. A limited number of seats are available, so if you want more information, go to Barbara Taylor Bradford's Facebook page, and you can find it right there. The lunch starts at noon. Ladies' lunch in New York on April the 9th. What else is coming up for you, Barbara?
Well, I'm moving, trying to move into the new place, and all the furniture is coming out of storage. So I'll be decorating, but I also have to finish the new book by July, because in August, a friend of mine has chartered the Seabourn Spirit and has invited 200 friends as her guests for a 12-day cruise for her birthday.
Oh, that sounds divine.
So how that wonderful. Takes me up to August. I have no plans. I'm booked until after August.
Now, can we just play a quick word game together since words are so fundamental?
Yes.
Okay, so it kind of goes back to This Is Your Life, because when I was watching that, I couldn't imagine how to be able to sit in the hot seat and then being shown pictures and friends coming up. So when I mentioned the street, Town Street, what does that bring back to you?
Well, my parents I didn't grow up there, but they moved to Town Street after I was working in London, and they lived there. So I think of my parents.
Oh, how lovely. And when I say the name Rupert Murdoch.
Oh, he's my boss. I have been published by Rupert. He owns HarperCollins Publishers in London, and they have published 29 books. I've worked for Rupert for 29 years. HarperCollins is part of News Corporation. I've known Rupert for many, many years. I consider him a friend. And, you know, he's very fond of his newspapers as well as his movie studios. And I always call him the boss.
The boss.
That's what, yes, and Julio, of course, is a friend of many years.
Now, speaking of the word the boss, is it okay, because it's very controversial right now, the word the boss, to be calling women the boss. Can women be called the boss?
Well, I don't see why not. You know, I'm not sure. I do think people get all tangled up in sort of being silly. Really, why not? I mean, I don't mind if somebody calls me the boss, but to have nobody to boss around. I didn't know it was controversial. I mean, I don't think I would say that to Mr. Murdoch's face. But
no.
When people mention him, I always say he's my boss. He owns HarperCollins.
You know, I was just watching, it was last week on The View or so, and they said, is it okay to call women the boss? I don't see why not.
Well, I don't see why not, but I mean, I'm sure there's going to be somebody who will hate me for saying that. But I mean, this is just semantics, isn't it? It's words.
It all is.
What about boss lady? You know, I
yeah,
don't
right.
know. I think the boss is okay. It doesn't matter. It's sort of Ice Age in a jokey way, obviously, about Rupert, but... all I can say is a good boss as far as I'm concerned.
How wonderful. And now the name Lindsay Wagner.
Oh, yes, Lindsay is wonderful. She was in several of Bob's films of my books, and she was in Voice of the Heart, was the one major film she did for him. And she's lovely. She was marvelous and a real trooper. Wonderful. Even when she was sick, she was on the set. When she had this kind of cold that I've had, she was still there. A true pro.
A true pro.
And a lovely
right.
person. A lovely person, Lindsay.
Much like yourself, Barbara Taylor Bradford. I'm enjoying our conversation immensely, I have to tell you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Now, the London American, what does that bring back to you?
That was a newspaper that was started in London before I was an adult, really. I was very young. And I worked on that newspaper for a few years. It was a weekly paper for Americans living in England. And it was a good little paper. It filled the bill. And, of course, we had all sorts of people who are no longer alive now. Bob Guccione was our cartoonist. And he left to start something called Penthouse. If you remember that magazine, Penthouse. Bob was our cartoonist. And the other people who were sweet and who have died, you wouldn't know. But certainly Bob Guccione started his journalistic career on the London American.
Guccione, a good Italian.
A good Italian, yes.
Have you been, now speaking of traveling in Italy and whatnot, where is your favorite place to go to in Italy?
Oh, we love Venice. Venice has always been a great place for us. And in fact, when we go to join the cruise of my friend, Bob and I fly to Venice and get on the ship there. And then when we come back, we dock 12 days later in Venice. We're going early, so we're not jet lagged. But I love Venice. It's just one of the most beautiful cities in the world. And I use it a lot in my book, Secrets from the Past.
Yeah. Lovely,
which was about war photographers, by the way, you know, and journalism. Because I'm still a journalist. I still write for the British papers.
How lovely is that? You are nonstop. You are a nonstop woman. Boss lady.
My husband always says you'll bury everybody. Anyway.
Well, finish this sentence, speaking of Mr. Bradford. Mr. Bradford would finish this sentence saying, Barbara Taylor Bradford is...
my wife, a good woman. my lovely wife, he'll say.
Oh, and now what would you like your legacy to be?
Oh, my God, I don't know. That's a tough one, you know. I don't know, except that, you know, she did her best. She tried her best. I don't know. That one you'll have to think out for me because I don't know.
Well, you did your best. And not only do we know you did your best, but New York Times has knighted you as the best-selling author. So, Barbara Taylor Bradford,
that's
you do your best. And that's why your readers and your fans adore you. That's why we had to have you on tonight's show.
Well, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure speaking with you, Barbara Taylor Bradford. The book, everyone, Cavendon Hall, it's out now. When will the sequel come out?
Next year at this time, you know, because it takes about a year. And it's available everywhere. It's an ebook. It's in the shops. It's in Barnes & Noble, all the stores, Amazon.com. And it's an ebook as well. So you can get it on your Kindle.
You can. Yeah, that's right. But there's nothing like a hard copy. Get that hard.
No, and it happens to be rather a lovely jacket, I think, with the woman in the blue.
The Cavendon Hall, she's stunning. Who now, with this cover, I'm looking at it right now, and it brings you back. It looks like she's going to dinner at Delmonico's in the 20s.
Yes, that's right, in New York.
So on that note, we'll go back and we'll revisit the 20s. We'll go to Cavendon Hall. So everyone, this week, go on to Amazon.com, purchase Cavendon Hall, and take a journey that Barbara Taylor Bradford has prepared for you in this superb novel. Thank you so much, Barbara Taylor Bradford, for being a guest.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. We'll do it again next year, Max.
I look forward to it. And before we let you go, can you give us a little quote of inspiration for our listeners?
A little?
Quote of an inspiration.
I didn't catch that.
An inspirational quote. Yes.
Be kind, be loving, and be hopeful.
And on
be
that
kind,
note,
be loving, and loving, be hopeful.
Be kind.
And hopeful.
And hopeful.
Be kind, loving, and hopeful.
I love it. That's our mantra for this week. Be kind, be loving, be hopeful.
That's
right.
Good night,
Barbara Taylor Bradford. It was a pleasure having you on Max and Friends.
Thanks, Max. Good night.
Good night. And to all of you, I say good night and good karma, and take life this week to the max. Be kind, be loving, be hopeful. Until we meet again on Max and Friends. Good night, everyone. Woo, that was fun.
LA Talk Radio, this is Max and Friends.